Good morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm your host and garden expert, Teresa Watkins, and we have a beautiful day today. Lots of festivals going on, lots of different events, but it's a great gardening weekend. Good morning, Lizzie. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine. Are you missing the rain?
We own like a dump truck construction tractor company, right? So every time I can hear my husband coming down the road with his Jake brake, I automatically just start coughing, knowing when he pulls into the driveway, it's going to be dusty. So yes.
I am missing the rain. My plants are missing the rain, and it is hot, but we're not, Central Florida and North Florida are not in drought conditions yet. But South Florida basically is just starting abnormally dry. It's not a drought, but it's abnormally dry. We do need the rain, and my plants are showing it. This week, Key West, you guys have a beautiful week ahead of you. No rainfall, but low 80s all week long. Sunny skies, really good gardening weather. Gardening fun for you. Tampa, you're mid-80s and sunny too, but no rain. Orlando's a little bit cooler. A little bit warmer. We're mid to upper 80s this week. North Florida, you're hot. Tallahassee, you're going to be warmer than Central or South Florida this week, mid to upper 80s, some 90s. And it's going to be sunny, and you have a small chance of rain, Tallahassee, next weekend, about a 30% chance. So this is the time that you're allowed to water twice a week. Please don't be watering every day, because that just makes it worse. Because when you water a little bit every day, you create a short root system. And that short root system is going to need to be watered. It's going to demand water, or it's going to start wilting. And you're saying to me, oh, Teresa, but it wilts and I have to water. Well, it's wilting because you're watering it. And so let those roots go down deeper. And by watering it twice a week, you can do 1/2 inch. Each application, that's going to be plenty for your turf, for your plants, for your flower beds, and for your herbs, your vegetable gardens. You may want to do just a little bit more. You can hand water any day. The thinking behind that is, the philosophy behind that is, that you're not going to be standing out there for 2 or 3 hours watering. You know, you're just going to hand water and just move on. And so, it's important to water. Make sure you water before you fertilize right now. If you're fertilizing anything, you want to make sure that they're hydrated, because even though it says it doesn't burn, fertilizer doesn't burn, when the plants are dehydrated, they will not take it as well. So, okay. It's important. So you can hand water your vegetables. We're doing that. Tony's out there every other day watering, because we have a lot of our herbs and vegetables in pots. And so we're watering those. It's going to be a great week. We have a great show for you today. I want to tell everybody that Tom McCubbin and I will be at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival today. Tom is going to be there between 9 and 11. He's going to be at the Plant Doctor Station there. That's really popular at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival. I will be there between 1 and 3. So tell Tom hi for me. We're going to be like ships in the night. It's at the Kitland Nelson Park. It's free. And today it's going to be open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And Sunday, tomorrow, it'll be 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And so that'll be a lot of fun. And so, and Tom will be with us the second hour. He's going to explain one of the South's most classic vegetables. And we're going to be talking about that. And I think we are going to be talking, Lizzie, we had an eclipse a couple of weeks ago where we warned everyone not to buy plants during an eclipse. Well, I think we have to make another announcement, because this is why you don't buy plants. And so now World Carnivorous Plant Day is going to be celebrated next week. I don't know whether it's related to the eclipse or not, but the World Carnivorous Plant Day is May 1st. We have the wonderful Kenny Coogan, who's going to be coming on next, and he is going to be talking about carnivorous plants. And he will be at the Tampa Festival, and he's going to be telling us all about that. So I'm very excited to talk to him. And Florida has more carnivorous plants than anywhere else in the United States.
You know, and I don't think people actually realize or see or actually pay attention to whenever they're out and about or in the woods or whatever.
In the wetlands hiking.
The wetlands area and stuff. I don't think people really pay attention to that. So, yeah, that's going to be very very informative conversation that we're going to have.
So, and then they have to stay tuned to next week because May 4th next week is World Naked Gardening Day.
Okay. So. You guys keep your little pictures to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And so it's gonna. That's lots of festivals going on in the springtime. So that's gonna be fun. So we are going to be taking your phone calls. 1-888-455-2967. Call us at the bottom of the half hour because we have Kenny Coogan coming up. He's with the International Carnivorous Plant Society. He will be coming up next. I'm Teresa Watkins. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Kenny Coogan is a columnist, author, and nurseryman. He sells many genera of carnivorous plants with a focus on lowland Nepenthes. His carnivorous plant nursery in Tampa focuses on temperate and tropical species. He ships throughout the United States, which is wonderful. And he is an active member of the International Carnivorous Plant Society, where he is education director. He's also the author of the book, Florida's Carnivorous Plants. And in addition to highlighting Florida's native species, the book engages and empowers readers on how to grow these wonderful, wonderful native wildflowers. Good morning, Kenny. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. And I'm glad you mentioned that they're wildflowers because all carnivorous plants, all 900 of them flower.
It's wonderful. And, you know, I think a lot of people, especially when they're hiking or going through the woods and, you know, through the different types of ecosystems that we have in our parks, miss the carnivorous plants. And so for those of people who have just moved to Florida and don't really know what a carnivorous plant is and they've never seen the Little Shop of Horrors, what is a carnivorous plant?
Carnivorous plants have to trap and lure prey. And then they have to be able to digest the prey. And then the third thing is they have to benefit from the digestion of prey. So lots of plants have like thorns, and some plants can even kill insects. But if they're not benefiting from the dead things, we do not consider them carnivorous.
Right. So they have to eat and digest their meal.
Yeah.
Okay.
And none of them use flowers to trap and digest. All of them use modified leaves.
Okay, that's really interesting because we're going to get into that. And so what niche would you say carnivorous plants hold in environmental habitats? What are their benefits to the earth?
Yeah, most of them live in nutrient-poor soils where it's hard for organisms to break down the nutrients and get the nitrogen. So non-carnivorous plants can't live, carnivorous plants can live, and then carnivorous plants can provide habitat for wildlife, they can provide food for wildlife, and then they're eating insects, so they're part of the food web.
Wonderful. And so I find that it's fascinating how Florida in the world, we have in the United States actually, more of the carnivorous plant species than any other state. Why is that?
Well, you have to go back 1.5 million years ago to the last ice age, and Florida acted like a glacier refuge. So when the North Pole was really covered in glaciers, plants migrated down here, and it's hard to imagine a plant migrating, but they do it very slowly, and the Gulf kind of moderated our temperatures, so we had four seasons back then. And then carnivorous plants generally like very wet soil, and they like a lot of sun. So Florida was the ideal location for about 40 species of carnivorous plants. And then in the past 10,000 years, only a handful of them have been able to migrate back up north. And what scares scientists is if only 5 out of 40 were able to migrate back up north in the last 10,000 years, what's going to happen, you know, in the future, when the climate is changing faster. than right. it has in the past 10,000 years.
Right. That is a concern. So I'm familiar with several varieties of carnivorous plants, but tell us about some of the more special ones here in Florida that people can find.
Some of the most showy and charismatic ones are the Sarracenia pitcher plants. We have a couple that come down to Orlando over to Tampa, but most of them are in the panhandle. And these are maybe 2 to 3 inches wide, and they can be up to 3 feet tall. So these are like the towering pitchers, and then they have some nectar underneath their lid, which attracts insects. And in that nectar, there's a chemical called conine, which is also found in poison hemlock and poison ivy, and it makes the bugs drunk. And then they get a little tipsy, and then they fall down the well. And in the well, there's a liquid that prevents their wings from working because it's thick. And then in 2 weeks to 2 months, the plant digests its meal.
Wow, that's fascinating. And I what I'm interesting about it is Venus flytraps, they're not necessarily native to Florida, right? But we do have populations here.
Yeah, so in the entire world, they're only found in North and South Carolina in about a 100-mile radius. And then in 1972, somebody started planting them in the panhandle of Florida. And those populations haven't really gone anywhere, so they're considered non-native.
Mm-hmm.
But scientists do not call them invasive because they haven't spread. And so we've had them for about 52 years.
Wow.
Now. And, of course, the Venus flytrap's the most famous out of all 900 species.
I think those are the ones that the kids are most likely to know. And but you grow Nepenthes. Tell us about the Nepenthes.
So the Nepenthes are a different type of pitcher plant. There's a pitcher plant from South America, Australia, Asia, North America. And the Nepenthes are the ones that are found in, like, really big hanging baskets at plant shows or even flea markets. And they kind of work similar to the North American Sarracenia that we have. And some of them can get really big. Some of them can eat 1 to 3 mice a year.
Mice?
They can hold they can hold 1 to maybe 2 liters of water. But then some of them only get the size of a golf ball.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they come, there's 170 species. They come in different colors, and they're really attractive. My favorite are the ones that have fangs. And the fangs drip nectar, so it looks like the plant is drooling, but ants are attracted to it.
Okay, so how does the Nepenthes then attract mice to its, where it can get sucked in? Is it because of the water that it holds? The mice need the water?
It's a little bit of the water, but it's also because there's nectar also underneath that lid.
Mm-hmm.
So the plants or the mice come over there, small mammals come over there, and then they start licking it. And then the peristome, which is the mouth of the pitcher plant, is very slippery, and they slip
fall in.
Wow. And then there's another pitcher plant that has a diuretic, which makes a little shrew go to the bathroom inside the mouth of the pitcher plant, and that's what it mostly eats, shrew urine.
Wow.
Aren't these great plants?
That's wonderful. I love them. It's just fascinating to think about Mother Nature in this way. And so what would you suggest that people can do, especially those that are out in parks or in out hiking, to protect carnivorous plants?
Well, we definitely have to protect their habitat first and foremost. And in the book that you mentioned, Florida's Carnivorous Plants, I have a list of like their biggest threats. And the number one threat for sundews and bladderworts is agriculture activities, but it's not like big ag. It is actually people fertilizing their non-native lawns, and then that fertilizer runoff causes, it's called the eutrophication. It causes too many nutrients in the system,
right.
And then carnivorous plants don't like that, and they don't thrive.
Right. No, I understand that. And I will tell you, I was just at one of my clients' houses this week, and there was a lot of meadow beauties and all sorts of different types of hatpins and things. So I knew it was kind of a wet area, wetland habitat. But I was looking for the Droseras, and the sundews in there. And so it was. I knew that this would be the type of habitat they would like because it was dry, sandy soils, but there was the moisture there. So your book, you're going to be appearing next week. Tell us all about this event, and will you be signing your books?
All right, so this Wednesday, May 1st, is World's Carnivorous Plant Day. And this Saturday, May 4th, I will be at USF Botanical Gardens from 9 to noon to celebrate carnivorous plants. So I'll have several tables of carnivorous plants, many native, some exotic, like the Nepenthes. And I will also have copies of the book, which I can sign for everyone.
Oh, that would
be... And we just want to celebrate carnivorous plants. It's always the first Wednesday of May. Now, unfortunately, I think you know this, next Saturday is also World Naked Gardening Day.
That's what we were just mentioning, how great
clothing
is required.
Clothing is mandatory for the USF Botanical Garden.
That is so true. And it's kind of a little bit, you know, of the world we live in today, that you have to remind people of that.
Yes, 100%.
And so your book, Florida's Carnivorous Plants, Understanding, Identifying, and Cultivating the State's Native Species, is wonderful. It's a beautiful book. I have it, and it is just wonderful. So, Kenny, tell us about your website and how people can buy your plants online.
My website is kennycoogan.com, and I'm active on Facebook and Instagram. And my nursery is called Critter Companions by Kenny Coogan. And if you want to learn more about carnivorous plants, you can go to the International Carnivorous Plant Society's website, which is carnivorousplants.org. And since the last time I saw you, I went to Japan for the international conference.
Wow.
And at the end of May, so in 1 month, our international conference is going to be in Vienna, Austria.
How lovely. That is great. Now, real quick, I've just got about 30 seconds. Do you still have grants for teachers for the schools?
Yes. Every August 1st to August 31st, we have about 50 teacher grants. We give each teacher $150 to add carnivorous plants to their classroom. And in order to win that grant, you have to apply between the month of August, and you have to create a lesson plan that you want to implement to your students. And we're almost always short on grants. So if you apply, you will most likely get it.
Wonderful. So that's kennycoogan.com. Thank you so much, Kenny. Have a great day and enjoy next Saturday, International Carnivorous Plants Day. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Kenny Coogan's. And I know that there's going to be carnivorous plants for sale at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival. There's usually a couple of vendors who have them. So if you'd like to try them, it's a wonderful opportunity to learn more about our exotic and but our native species that we have here. And they are considered wildflowers.
Yes. And that I didn't realize that until he said that. See, he's a wealth of knowledge. And also love the fact that he has grants available to help, you know, education. So kudos to him for doing that. That's awesome.
He does, and he raises ducks. So we didn't get in the chance to do the ducks. I wonder if they eat his Nepenthes there. So thank you so much, Kenny. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is your chance to get your gardening questions answered. You can give us a call at 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680, like Mike and Eric. We've been very chatty with Eric this morning. And Mike, we need the rain desperately. We certainly do. And so if you'd like to give us a gardening question, that would be wonderful. I mentioned the Savannah Meadow Beauty that I found this week at the back of the property that I'm redoing, and they were just beautiful. And so Florida has 10 native meadow beauties, and this is in the Rexia genus, and the Savannah Meadow Beauty stands among the tallest at around 4 feet. Its bright pink blooms can be seen rising up like flags from the shorter vegetation of the pine flatwoods, wet savannas, and roadside dishes. So if you see a petaled, kind of looks like a little, a coreopsis, a big, little bit bigger than coreopsis, but bright pink. That's probably a meadow beauty. They have 4 to 5 magenta petals with 8 conspicuous stamens topped by bright yellow anthers. And the stems are smooth and yellow-green, and they do get to be about 4 to 5 feet tall. What's interesting about meadow beauties, though, they're pollinated by bees through buzz pollination. And this technique is in which bees use vibration to remove and collect pollen. And only about 9% of the flowers are pollinated in this way.
Oh, wow.
So they just come up close to it and vibrate. And so these flowers have unique anthers that are completely sealed except for a small pore at the top of small slits along the sides. These tiny openings prevent insects from entering the anther, but they do allow for pollen to exit when the anther is vibrated at specific frequencies. So if you're ever close to a bee that is using buzz pollination, if you listen closely as the bees approach the flowers, you can actually hear the change in the buzzing. And okay. So Florida meadow beauties are found from Panhandle, the Northern Peninsula, and southeast down to Orange County. The hardiness zones are 8A to 9B. They are perennials. They like moist, acidic, sandy soils, full sun, and they are propagated by seeds, but they're not commercially available. So you're going to have to find them in a native habitat somewhere.
Okay.
And so, but they're wonderful. So when you're out there hiking and you see these beautiful pink flowers that are blooming right now, those are meadow beauties, and they're so pretty. And just to come across a little bit of a habitat that has them is just, it's just wonderful. It's like paradise.
Oh, I love that. That's just some good stuff right there.
Yeah. And so 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text me at 23680. Some of the specials that you could be finding right now that you can be harvesting are the avocados and bananas. And then also you will see more tropical plants that you'll be harvesting. So the chayote and the sapote, you can be harvesting those two at the time. Have you ever grown tropical mame sapote?
No, I have not.
They have this brownish fruit that when you bite into it, tastes like custard.
Really?
And it's just nice and soft. And there's the species that tastes like chocolate custard. Chocolate pudding.
You know it's not April Fool's, right?
No, it's not. Okay. I'm serious. The sapote is S-A-P-O-T-E, tastes like chocolate. Anyone out there is growing them, you can call and let Lizzie know. It does taste like chocolate pudding.
Very interested in this now.
Yeah. Hmm.
Okay.
It is tropical, though, and so the first, you can't. Orlando's about the most northern portion where they can grow because they will freeze, and so we definitely want to do that. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. I had Beverly. From Tallahassee, and this is a different Beverly, so hi to both Beverlys.
Mm-hmm.
If you, let me just go right here so I can get Beverly's email up. She sent a beautiful picture, and when I say beautiful, it was just really good that I could really get a description from it. And she says, Teresa, why am I getting yellow leaves on my Sweet Million cherry tomatoes plant? And so she planted it in potting mix and manure. And she also saw some yellow leaves on her early girl. What she said she'd like some suggestion on what she could do. And so, Beverly, thank you for the great picture. It was wonderful. So there's a number of reasons that tomato leaves will turn yellow, and that's called chlorosis, and you know, being chlorotic. One is old age. Leaves at the bottom of your plant, tomato plant, are the first ones to go to die. And it's very normal. And as the tomato plant gets bigger, then the leaves become stronger and they don't fall off. Other reason could be not enough water. It doesn't look like you're watering it too much. It looks like it could be a little dry, Beverly. And then the other reason is over-fertilizing possibly or under-fertilizing. And so it's in a 3-gallon pot and it's on top of a concrete block. And that may be because Beverly doesn't want to bend over and stuff, and that's perfectly fine. But with our summer-like temperatures, it could just be too dry for the tomatoes, Beverly. So you need to water them at least 2 to 3 times a week with these hot temperatures. Make sure that there's enough soil in the pot. If it's been growing in a 3-gallon pot for, you know, several months and it's got a good root system, it just may need a little bit more soil. And then also, too, I noticed some of the veins are deficient. They've got a strong veining, a green veins on them with the yellow leaf on the outside of the veining. So it could be lack of fertilizer. So tomatoes need magnesium and potassium and nitrogen. You want to use a good vegetable fertilizer like Espoma or Tomato Tone or Osmocote to give the plant the nutrition it needs. So there's just a couple of reasons why your leaves may be turning yellow, Beverly. So stick your finger in that pot. If it's cool, moist, or damp, you do not need to water. But if it's very dry, then you're going to definitely want to make sure. And it could be so dry that you may just want to soak it in a pot, just a larger bin or something so the water can absorb it. You may want to think about up-potting it and resizing the pot and growing it in a larger pot too as well. Great question. 1-888-455-2967. If you're in the area, or you can text me at 23680. Tom McCubbin will be at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival today between 9 and 11. I'll be there between 1 and 3 at the Kit Carson Park. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I love our listeners. They're just right so prompt. So Eric said he has the Silas Wood variety of sapote, and this will be the first year he's had fruit. And Lizzie, the chocolate ones do taste like chocolate.
Now, I got a question on a diet reference of this, okay? So, you know, you want to cut out, you know, too much sugar, too bad, blah, blah, whatever. Is it sweet whenever you eat it?
It tastes just like chocolate pudding. Seriously.
Really?
And it's very healthy. Yes. Chocolate pudding.
I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, I'll bring you some. And so that's good. I want to remind everyone today that Peterson's Nursery, thank you, Howie, for the reminder, it's going to have an orchid repotting class from 9 to 11. And it's just, you just bring in your orchid. Only limit is 2. Only 2 orchids per person. And they will help you repot them and upsize them if you need to. So that's at Peterson's Nursery in Lakeland. So we appreciate them letting us know that they're doing that, because that's really a nice thing to do for someone.
That's very nice, because I know how stressful it is. And one year I will be brave and I will own a couple of orchids. But right now I'm just working on turkeys. So.
Just turkeys. Let's go to Jane in Tallahassee. Good morning, Jane. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning, Teresa. I have a medium-sized magnolia tree, and it's looking skimpy. It's not looking well, and I have white dots all over the leaves that travel upward. The top of the tree is okay, but the bottom is not. It's thinned out.
Okay.
Doesn't look good.
Okay. Is it in the shade, or does it have full sun?
It has full sun.
Okay. And do you have an irrigation system, or is it getting water during this dry time we're having?
I have an irrigation system.
Okay. And so I will tell you that for magnolias to lose their leaves in the springtime is normal. They are considered an evergreen tree, but they do drop their leaves. And so as they are pushing out a new leaf, they will drop their leaves in the spring. So this drought may have acerbated this a little bit, but I want to make sure that it is getting water, and I would say at least twice a week. And then you also, too, want to make sure you're fertilizing it with an acidic fertilizer if it's still growing. It's not full size. So it will need fertilizer, okay? Now, the other problem you have, it has scale on it. Now, when trees are stressing out, which means when they are not getting enough water or they don't have the nutrition to be healthy to resist pest issues. They are susceptible to scale. So you need to get a horticultural oil product, okay, and you just follow the instructions. You got to spray the top of the leaf, the bottom of the leaf, and you know, go ahead and just spray where you can reach. It will probably outgrow the scale, and it won't damage it too much, but you want to take care of the issue now when it's kind of stressing out and losing its leaves. Okay?
Okay. May I ask you one quick question?
Sure.
I have a new lawn. It is probably 1 month old, St. Augustine grass.
Uh-huh.
We water it every day, but I think we should be stopping now.
Right. So here is the instructions for watering a new lawn. You water it once a day, St. Augustine, once a day for the first week. Once a day for, you know, you want to put down about an inch each time you water it once a day. Then the second week, you water it every 2 days, that same 1 inch. And then the third week, you water it every 3 days. And by the fourth week, you're on the schedule of twice a week watering. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So it's probably overwatered. I would just go ahead and start to, especially with the rain that you're getting next week, go ahead and reduce your watering to twice a week.
Very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Jane. Great call. And, you know, people, and they're told to water. I mean, I just don't understand it. They're told to water every day. And, you know, we're not having the rainfall like we do during the summertime. But, you know, depending on the temperatures, you could possibly, like for zoysia grass and for Bermuda, you may have to water it twice a day for the first week if the temperatures are in the 90s and really extremely hot. But you want to wean it off of the irrigation. If you water it every day for a month, the roots aren't going to go anywhere. They're not going to go down deeper, and it's just going to go through a little bit of stress when you take it off that water.
Right. And that's crazy. Okay. Everybody listening, raise your hand if you overwater stuff because you're worried that it's dry.
Lizzie
right now
is raising her hand.
And I know I'm not the only one listening and talking. I'm telling you, like, and my basil is just, I don't know what's going on with my basil. I should have taken a picture because, well, you know, a good listener would take a picture and email it to you.
And give me your city.
Yes. And okay. All right. So we're looking in Lake County. But my basil's doing something weird. It's got brownish black spots on the leaves, and it's a yellowish color sometimes. But I don't know what I'm doing. Am I overwatering it? What's going on?
What time of the day do you water?
Pick a time. It's because whenever I get out of here from the morning show.
Okay, so but you water during the day. You don't water at night. And by night, I mean like any time after 6 o'clock through like 3 o'clock. You don't water at night.
Never.
Okay, good. That's bad.
Lying. I have I'm lying. I have a couple times, but majority of the time, it's usually around 4 p.m. ish. Now that the time has changed.
Yeah.
4 p.m. Between 4 and I'm done by 6 p.m.
Okay, I would water in the morning.
Okay.
That's the best way. That way they're already hydrated so that they can get through the day. By the time at 4 o'clock, they may be kind of stressed out. And even though they'll have the water, then they're going to sit wet all night. Okay? So if you water during the day, the roots can absorb the water in the early morning hours and then use it during the day. And then they've kind of dried off by the end of the day.
Okay, now here's not a dumb question. And I know there's a listener out there that's thinking this too, but I've always been told that if you water during the day, the water on the leaves will burn the leaves because of the sun coming through the droplets. Is that a fact?
Does it rain during the day?
Yeah, but the sun doesn't always come out right away.
No, it's fine.
See, no dumb questions.
No
See?
Dumb questions. That was a very smart question.
Thank you.
And no, I mean, you can put plants and water plants. Plants live in the water during the day.
Okay.
Yeah, so water doesn't hurt it. So
all right, thank you
That's
for
an
that.
Old wives' tale.
I know.
We have 1-888-455-2967. We have some great messages, text message we're going to get to. From Mike and then also Eric. We're going to also be taking your phone calls in the next hour. I have the amazing and wonderful Tom McCubbin coming up in our next hour.
Oh, I thought you were talking about me. My bad.
And so we are, he's going to be on in the next hour, and he's going to be talking about the Southern classic vegetable. He's also going to be bragging about his gardens. I posted them last night on Facebook. You can go to our Facebook page, and you can actually follow us and like us and give us 5 stars.
Yes, please.
That would be wonderful. But you can see how great his garden is doing. I can't wait to talk to him. And you'll be able to see him today from 9 to 11 at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival at the Kit Carson Park today. And he'll be just wonderful to talk to. So,
and they'll be able to catch you, too, also.
Yes, I will be there between 1 and 3 today. And so I would like to thank Kenny Coogan. He is the Educational Director for the International Plant Society. Carnivorous Plant Society, I should say, and you're going to want to go and see him next week at the USF Botanical Gardens. So I'm very excited about that. He's a world of knowledge on carnivorous plants, and you're going to want to get a signed book of Florida's carnivorous plants signed by Kenny Coogan. So
yes,
you can go to kennycoogan.com if you would like to see all of his Nepenthes, that he grows and he sells all over the world. So you can go out and see that. It's just a wealth of information. I certainly do appreciate it. I met last week a Jonathan Ridner. He is the owner of the LJ Plant Nursery, and he grows indoor bonsais and exotic houseplants. I'm going to have him on in a couple of weeks. I think he'll be really nice, really interesting to listen to. So I met him, and I'm excited to get his knowledge, too. So we have another hour of a great show coming up for you. You can text us at 23680, or you can give us a call at 1-888-455-2967.
Yep.
Put that in your phone, and you can just have it. And you can text and call us anytime during the show. And even afterwards, Lizzie, you check the text messages.
That's right. Yeah, I stay on the text messages whenever I come back up Monday morning. And yeah, there's a lot of text messages, so don't think they get lost. And if they do, then you can email Teresa. Teresa, what's your email?
Teresa.Watkins@live.com. And you can go to my website, www.she-consulting.com. And so we are going to be today, out and about at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival. How many of you have ever grown southern peas? You know, it's good luck to eat them at New Year's Day, Lizzie. So maybe you've never tried them. Tom's going to be here to help with all our P's and Q's. That's questions about peas, southern peas. You don't want to miss a minute of Tom's interview. He'll be coming right up. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
If you missed any of Kenny Coogan's interview, you can go to our website, which is betterlawns.com, and the last hour will be up here shortly.